David Gately is one unique character, from playing and coaching football to becoming one of Australia's most popular horse racing tipsters. Gator has lived a fascinating life. In part one of Gator's Your Story, he explains the heartbreak of missing out on playing footy at the highest level, his love for coaching, and the reason behind his success as a form analyst. Hello, I'm Gareth Hall, and welcome to RSN Central's Your Story with David Gately. David Gately, geez, it's a pleasure and an honour to catch up with you as part of our segment here on RSN Central called Your Story, and I'm fascinated to hear your story today. How are you, Gator?
Oh, well, mate, it's a pleasure to be invited.
We're in the middle part of the Spring Carnival, and you're one of the most popular individuals in Melbourne these days. Everybody wants a tip. When you were growing up, Gator, is this what you wanted to do or wanted to be?
Oh, look, not really. I think, you know, I remember going to parent-teacher interviews, not having a clue, right, about what your future holds. But they would say, what do you want to do with your life? And I'm like, what? I don't understand the question for a start. Secondly, I just want to play footy. So, and I remember my year nine teacher saying, well, there's only 0.1% of people that make a career out of footy. So you probably need some other options. So anyway, look, I rode the footy path as long as I could, thinking that that was what I wanted. And it wasn't until I sort of got involved in racing about 17 years of age. And from there, that interest blossomed and became a real passion, yeah.
So where did you grow up, Gator?
Yeah, so we grew up down Aspendale way. Pretty much all our lives, myself and three other siblings, we're back then. No one had really heard of Aspendale. It's a bit of a hub these days, but back in the day, it was a bit barren, a bit out of south.
So did you enjoy school, or all you wanted really to do was play some footy?
The latter. So school was just means to an end, and I just did enough to get through, which unfortunately seems to be filtering through to the offspring. But just doing enough. I remember just C's and D's and whatever, doing enough to get through, but just holding out for recess and then lunchtime and then weekends to play footy. And that was, what I loved. And I think that's really important, finding your passion. it's the best advice I got, probably.
So how good were you at footy in the early days, Gator?
It's a question I find tough to answer. I mean, compared to who? Like, compared to Greg Williams, I was no good at all, or Chris Judd, but compared to the fat guy in the seconds who had a pie at half time, I was a superstar. So it's all relative, isn't it? Look, I had a lot of fun doing it. I think I had above average natural ability, but just rode it as far as I could, mate. And that's something I'm pretty proud of.
So benchmark 78 Country Cup galloper, how would you rate yourself?
Yeah, look, that's a question for someone else. But, we did have a lot of fun some success. I mean, lucky enough to captain a local team at Parkdale, which I'm really proud of, and, best and fairest and that sort of thing. So good enough to have those honours, and they are honours. But certainly not AFL standard. It wasn't quite good enough.
Were you close?
Played state league, so VFA it was back then, for Sandringham, under the late, great Trevor Barker. And it was at that stage where I was probably just building, but it was also at that stage that I dislocated my knee for like the fifth time, and the surgeon said, that's it for you, footy-wise. I think I was 19. I'm devastated, as you can imagine, when footy's your whole life. So missed a couple of years, but managed to come back to it at a local level, back at Parkdale. And as I say, went on to captain them, and we had a lot of fun and some success.
Was that difficult in your teenage years? And you just mentioned that football was your life. It was your dream to play VFL, AFL football. And then you have that taken away from you. How did you deal with that, Gator?
Oh, not well. Because I think back in those days, you just didn't have the tools. You know, it's like kids, I guess, these days trying to deal with a global pandemic. You just don't have the tools yet. I mean, some adults don't. So what hope are these kids got? For me as a 19-year-old, I just didn't have enough armoury, enough weapons, to deal with it well. Luckily, I think one of the smarter things I did after that was go and see like a psychologist. You know, no one was doing that back then, but I think it was one of the smarter things I did because it just put things into, not so much into perspective, but just gave you a few tools and a few, you know, a few little weapons that you could use to keep your the mindset where it needed to be.
I find that interesting. So you went to a psychologist. Was that your inspiration to do that, or did you get persuaded by someone else to go and see a psychologist to help you out, Gator? And you mentioned the tools that they helped you, or the tools that they gave you to help you get through that period. What were they?
Yeah, so I can't remember where it spawned from, but I certainly have always had a belief that, you know, of how important the mindset is. You know, I've sort of recognised that. But the things I couldn't recognise at the time were things like failing at sport and not playing well in a final or not being able to play football. It has no direct relevance to your self-worth as a human being. And that was the best lesson that came out of all of that. You know, fancy, looking back, I laugh at it now, thinking that I thought these things had some reflection on me as a person, you know. And then you go and listen to Kate Campbell after she gets beaten, you know, the Olympics, and she says a similar thing. You know, I don't need a gold medal to have self-worth. So yeah. I think the next generation get it, a lot of them. But back then, it took some learning.
David Gately with us here on Your Story on RSN Central. And so, Gator, is that just, do you just flick the switch then and then you understand what self-worth is? Or is that a process that takes you a little while to work out yourself over time?
Yeah, look, I think it's certainly a process. It's not as if, you know, you say one thing and then, oh, the penny drops. But I certainly think that's a part of it. You know, building that knowledge, having that taught, and then the ability to absorb it and put it into practice, and not be dictated to by things that aren't really important in the scheme of things.
Is it easier said than done? There'll be people listening here now and they'll be thinking, well, I should really do that, Gator. What would your advice be to them?
Pretty much just that you know, these things don't have any impact on you as a person. Like, Your worth has nothing to do with whether you get a kick on a weekend or whether you hit the hockey net or, you know, shoot four at netball or whatever it is. One has nothing to do with the other. If you don't tip a winner on the weekend, that's fine. I think it's a really important lesson and, you know, one of the better lessons I learned, clearly.
It sounds like, and I was going to get to you tipping a little later on, but this is a good segue in a way, is that mental approach now that you have to your tipping, what you learnt from that disappointment of in your footballing days when you were 19, has probably held you in really good stead to cope with that mental battle as being a tipster. Because, Gator, when you're tipping on RSN 927 Sky Racing and with the people that subscribe to your tipping service as well, there has to be a lot of pressure involved with all of that.
Yeah, there certainly is. So I guess what you do is you just make sure all the preparation work's done. So if you do all that and take all of the external factors out of it, like, you know, if you are unprepared or if you're not, you know, crossing every T, if you take those aspects out of it, you can be much more comfortable in the result. So the result tends to just take care of itself. Some things are just out of your control. So, you know, the great analogy I was given was, you know, if you're a pitcher, all I can do is control my stance, my follow through. I can't control the batter. I can't control what he's doing and he's thinking. So from my perspective, doing form, you know, I'm the pitcher. I can prepare everything perfectly. I can do everything that's required for me to perform well. But then as soon as I let go of that ball, it is out of my control. And all I can then do is learn from what happens, learn from the outcome for the next time.
So you missed out on your footballing dream, and then the passion for horse racing and tipping must have arrived with you, Gator. When did you realise that this was the purpose that you wanted to follow and make a career out of all of this?
Yeah, so I sort of had still had both dreams going at the one time. So, you know, I was just working some dead-end job, but I was obviously playing footy and then got into coaching footy, and I thought that was going to be my path with a strong passion still for racing. So I thought I could do both, you know, and then started up the Oz Racing website and still going strong, having a lot of fun with that. So I sort of had both irons in the fire, if you like, but I still thought that footy coaching would be my... my long-term thing, but then once you could only do one or the other, once it came down to that, and the footy coaching was sort of taken away from me to some extent, I went down this path strongly, and look, I'm just as happy about it, and so that would have been, you know, probably, you know, look, I started tipping when I was about 20, but I've started probably seriously, you know, into the website and so on from about, you know, probably early 30s onwards.
So back to your football coaching, you were the VAFA Coach of the Year. Now, I was having a look at the honour roll, Gator. In 2007, Luke Beveridge. In 2008, Luke Beveridge. In 2009, David Gately. So you can coach, Gator. Why did you love coaching so much, and how did you get into that?
Yeah, it just stems from your love of footy. And just, look, I was very lucky to have a couple of coaches who were phenomenal in their knowledge. And I guess I was able to absorb a lot of that, you know, and put a lot of it into practice. But I think having, you know, a real passion for it, but a real passion for the development as well. And you know, the young men as they were, and to be young women now as well, which is awesome. Having that passion for to see their success was really well. It was it's phenomenal, is what it is. Mm. It's and it's not really necessarily an ego thing, but you know, I didn't even realise it at the time once I got into coaching. But when I left Oakley in 2013, when I had a crack at Frankston as an assistant, one of the parents just came up to me and said, "You know, you've really helped mould our sons." And I'm like, wow, that is phenomenal feedback. You know, you can take or leave your Coach of the Year with respect to Luke and everyone else who's won it. That's the real joy in it.
Did you think when you took over that job, or when you started to get into coaching, that you could actually make a difference, not just on the footy field with wins and losses, but a difference in people's lives?
Well, no, because I just didn't have that. You know, I should have realised, because that had happened to me through a couple of phenomenal coaches, absolutely outstanding individual human beings and footy brains, footy coaches. So I should have realised that, but it wasn't until I got into it and you know, according anecdotally, you know, had some impact that came to fruition. When I was originally getting into coaching, I just wanted to win games of footy, and you know, wanted to do that, you know, forever. So that was the draw card originally. Yeah.
Did it teach you what did it teach you most of all as a person, Gator, coaching? Did you learn much from it? And you think, well, I didn't realise that until you're in control of a football side.
Yeah, look, I think no matter what you do, you're hopefully learning something from it, you know, irrespective of what your sort of aspirations are or jobs you're doing. But I think that as I say, I think that was probably the biggest thing I took out of it. You know, having success was awesome, but, you know, having, you know, if you're able to have some sort of impact, I think that's where the real gold lies, yeah.
Is there one moment, one story, when you look back in your coaching career that makes you smile, that you still remember today like it's yesterday?
Look, we're really lucky. We had a great group of young and hungry and tough athletes and kids. So I think it made the job a lot easier from my perspective. But gee, there'd be, you know, a thousand things you could think that just make you smile. But so I think winning a prelim on the last kick of the day was pretty phenomenal, because I remember jumping around like an idiot, just losing the plot completely, getting into it. You know, I think it was our third grand final, and it was just an amazing feeling, you know. And beyond that, you pretty much, you remove yourself from it because it's not about you as a coach. As soon as you think it's about you, I think you're toast. You know, I think currently there's still some AFL coaches who amazingly think it's about them. It's not. It's about the club and it's about the individual players.
Do you still miss it? Do you miss it now?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I think I'd get back to it in a heartbeat. But the thing is with coaching, same with horse racing, same with anything really, if you're not 100%, you know, if you're 99.9 or less, you're doing injustice to everyone involved. So if I was asked to go back into it next year, I think I'd be underprepared and it wouldn't be fair. So I think I'd have to go back and do some apprenticeship work again and build up to a senior coaching job.
Be interesting. Coached by David Gately, you'd be thinking, geez, oh, coach, I know it's quarter time, but the first leg of the quaddy is about to start. There'd be situations like that, I would imagine. And I reckon you would have a lot of power trying to recruit players to your football side, Gator.
We did have a rule. So back when I was coaching, some of the players loved the horse racing as well.
Yeah.
So we had a rule that we had to stay away from any race results. If anyone told me a race result during the day, 400s on Tuesday. So, because I'd stay away from them, record the races, obviously, back then on Sky, whatever it was, TVN, and watch them live, inverted commas. So if they told me the result, there was severe punishment.
That would have been interesting, and especially if you're trying to recruit a player, a couple of players, maybe a couple of free subscriptions to the family for Oz Racing, just to get them over the line to head to your football club. Hey, Gator, we'll take a break. This is Gareth Hall and David Gately. This is David Gately's Your Story here on RSN Central. When we return, we'll come back and ask Gator how he actually got into the racing media and is now one of the biggest names in Australian racing. Welcome back to RSN Central's Your Story with Gareth Hall. My guest here is David Gately. We all know Gator. And Gator, we just had a chat about your footballing career as a player and a coach. And we touched on it briefly regarding how you got into tipping horses in the racing media. So when did you realise that you could actually make a business of this, tipping horses?
Yeah, so it started out just as like a free, fun tipping thing, and I'd only do it when I could be bothered, basically, which was carnival time, so spring and autumn. So just Melbourne and Sydney was all I was worried about. And then it was a little email service with like 6 or 7 mates. They were forwarding it on to their mates and mates and mates and mates, etc. And when I stopped doing it, there was this flood of hatred. where's all the tips? What's happening? So I think at that point I said, hang on, you know, look, I'm a slow learner, right? But I think at that point I was like, okay, this could be a bit of fun, and a good way to make a bit of a living. So I started doing that, and then it was
how
still free for
you,
a long
time. How old were you? Yeah, when you decided to have a crack at this professionally.
Yeah, so probably late 20s. So I'd been doing it for effectively tipping, inverted commas, for a decade up till then. But it was at that point that we thought, we could have a bit of fun and make it a bit of loose. So we still started out as free, but we built a little website and then we started charging, I think it was something like $30 a month, something really minuscule, so most people could afford it because it wasn't about the money, it was about the enjoyment and the development of the sport. Add to that, I was sending those tips on to people I knew at Best Bets, Herald Sun, Winning Post, pretty much anywhere I could get my foot in the door to get a job in racing. And then did a week's work with Mark Reed, which I learnt a phenomenal amount, just quietly. And then that became the door opened at Best Bets, and the rest is history, as they say.
So being a great form analyst, when did you, and you say it on numerous occasions when I interview you on RSN Central on a Saturday morning, that everybody's still learning, you're learning something different every day. But you're very good at it. What do you think the secret is, Gator? What makes you such a good form analyst?
First of all, I'd probably refute that. But secondly, I would say that you just have to... I think you have to find... Same as footy and getting... Having the right people to learn from. So I think I was really lucky. So I first got into racing at 17. I got an interest there. And there was this professional punter who was sending me stuff, and the ability to learn so much so quickly was phenomenal. And I think I was really lucky that a lot of people don't have that exposure. Then to pick up knowledge from guys like Steve Moran and those sort of guys who I had great respect for, Tony Braswell back then even, and building that knowledge, but always having the door open to continue learning, like never thinking you knew it all and still don't. I think is really important, but certainly if you're starting out, find some people that you really think that they can explain what's happening to you. That's why I never give one word tips out, because no one's learning anything if you just tell. I think incentivize a win. You've got to explain why, so then they can learn the building blocks, the scaffolding to get to that conclusion.
I find it fascinating, and I talk to a host of different form analysts, but different form analysts have different philosophies on how they read a race, Gator. So despite learning from some very good people, did you find a style or find a way or a process that really suited the way that you thought about the game?
Yeah, so I 100% agree with what you're saying. I mean, look at someone like Lizzie Jelfs, who doesn't really do form, but she finds a lot of winners. So it just shows you how many different ways there are in this game to come to a conclusion, and none are wrong. You know, we get a lot wrong, make no mistake, but none are right or wrong. You know, otherwise, look, there'd be a $1.01 favourite in every single race if we all had the same opinion. So to answer that question, I think, I don't know about a style, but I think just calling on a build-up of knowledge and a couple of key elements that are really important, like things like, you know, look, a horse is an athlete, so it has to have speed. At some point in the race, you need to be fast. You know, I'd steer away from horses that had a lot of starts and meagre strike rates, and you just filter it out that way. But it's nothing, it wasn't anything conscious. It just evolved sort of organically, if you like.
Talk us through then what you do actually on a Wednesday. I would imagine it's your busiest day.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, no, it's full on. So it goes from sort of 9 a.m. through to probably 10 p.m. You know, without much sort of break. And you know, I cover off Melbourne first, hit that deadline, and then get stuck into Sydney, and just have a database of these athletes. So they're all athletes and they've all got their idiosyncrasies. Having a head start on each of their own individual strengths and weaknesses is a great starting point. And it saves a lot of time and effort because you don't have to research it. You already know it effectively, what this athlete's strengths and weaknesses are and how it can fit into the puzzle that is finding a winner.
I guess it's like being a coach in a way as well. You're trying to dissect a battle on a sporting field and work out which side that you think that you can get the better of in certain parts of the footy field. But I guess racing, when you're analysing races, you've got your negative and your positives, and you're trying to work out the puzzle and work out how you can get the result that you want in a way.
I agree. There's a lot of similarities indeed. I think the difference between say footy coaching and form, with the footy, you're trying to get the best out of each individual athlete, whereas in racing, that's less relevant. You're trying to find who the best athlete is relative to that race and that distance and that track condition and that barrier and all these variables that go into it. You're trying to find a conclusion, and what I do is to find a ratings order. So, you know, people say, oh, you have five picks in a race. No, I don't. I only have one on top. I only have one horse second, one horse third, and that's the ratings order I go with, and then explain them out. So, as I say, the next generation can hopefully learn something and we can keep this great game going.
With David Gately here on RSN Central, it's your story. And Gator, who's easier to read, a thoroughbred or a human being?
Well,
as athletes.
Yeah, as athletes. So there's pros and cons, because humans can talk, but they can lie. So that's a problem. Yes. for us, this species. Horses can't really lie to you, but they can't talk. And look, any Hall of Fame trainer will tell you they don't need to talk. They can read their idiosyncrasies, and that's, you know, that is the artistry of it. You know, I think of Colin Hayes and Bart Cummings and Friedman's, and it is respected is the word, and it's beyond respect. So I guess to a much lesser extent, we're trying to read through what these horses have been able to do on the racetrack, build a profile for them, what their strength is, and will that strength come to the fore on the weekend or whenever the race is to get the result you want.
So many different variables as well that you need to try and work out in your head, Gator. Is there certain rules that you follow when you're doing the form? For instance, that you only tip horses that 1,000 meter horses that are, or you only like to tip horses that on a heavy track that have had a start at a preparation. Do you have any rules that you follow when you're tipping?
Well, the short answer is no, because I think the problem with blanket rules is it's a bit lazy, I think. It's a bit of a shortcut, and you're trying to circumvent sort of doing the work. It just doesn't give you the whole picture. So although I factor that in, you know, if a horse hasn't run ever on a wet track, it becomes a greater risk. So you have to factor that into the price. Does it mean it can't win? Clearly not. Does it mean its chances of winning are less? Yes, it does. So there, here comes the price aspect. You see what I'm saying? So that's,
yep.
I think that's the real art to it. But if you just have these blanket rules of, I'm only backing, you know, I think that is lazy, and it'll catch you out.
In part two of David Gately's Your Story, he explains his shock exit from racing.com.
Oh, look, I think it had just run its race, to be honest. You know, I think obviously they brought in the new CEO at the time, Andrew Catterall, and obviously he's not there any longer, but it just didn't really sit right from the start, you know. And then once he moved me off the Saturdays and the fun quickly drained from it, and then once the new get-on season started, he left me off that, I just thought, yeah, look, I'm obviously not wanted.
And his philosophies on life.
I don't do regrets, so that's not a thing that happens. So I think I would tell myself to trust in what's going to happen, you know, as far as trust in what music you love. Don't waste time with music you don't love. Spend that time with the music you love. When you find love, go for both feet. If you find your passion, whether it be footy or racing or ice hockey, go both feet in, and don't do it by halves. And, you know, hopefully, you know, that's what we're about to do.
You're with Gareth Hall. This is RSN Central.